Welcome to the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast, a podcast exclusively for members of the Quilt Fiction Story Guild. I'm Frances O'Rourke Dowell, and we're reading my work in progress friendship album, 1934. Thank you for joining us, and as always, thank you for being part of the Quilt Fiction community. Now, on to the story. Chapter 20. To the Editor. I was so excited when it was announced that the farmer's wife would have a regular quilting column in its pages. As someone who has made quilts since I was a young girl, I'm always in search of new patterns, especially those that help me use up the contents of my scrap basket. But I'm afraid that Mrs. Grangerfield's column has become a disappointment. I certainly had my hopes up when I read her first column about quilts and family memories, and her second column about improving our quilting bees was also a delight. But recently, our columnist seems to have gone astray. The patterns on proffer, both of them applique and overly ornate, don't fit into my home decor. While I like to make pretty quilts, my quilts are made to be used. It seems to me, and to others whom I've spoken with on the matter, that Mrs. Grangerfield designs quilts better suited for an art museum. Perhaps she will consider turning her considerable skills as a writer and a seamstress to what today's farm wife really needs. Pretty patterns that we can stitch up in the evening after our chores are done. The quilts don't have to be simple, but they do have to be fit for a bed cover. Sincerely, Ethel Hinton, Mrs. James D., Winterset, Iowa. Emmeline's hand shook as she read the letter aloud to Florence. She'd like to get her hands on this Ethel Hinton of Winterset, Iowa, this plain Jane of the prairie. What does Edith Hinton know about quilt making anyway? She fumed as she deposited the letter back into its envelope. And why does my editor bother forwarding me such nonsense? What is it supposed to accomplish? Florence was sitting at her desk, sorting through the Morning Post. I think it's supposed to make you consider what your readers would like you to write about. You can't make every column about Rose Kretzinger, you know. Mrs. Hinton may have a point. Yes, on the top of her head. Emmeline, who had been sitting in the chair by the doorway, stood and began to pace. Old Ethel ought to take it as a compliment that I consider her and her ilk artists, creators. But they don't, Emmeline. Florence sighed, finally looking up. Don't you see? In other parts of their lives, they might be interested in art or politics or books. But when it comes to quilting, they simply want to make quilts. They want patterns that challenge them without being too challenging. I think old Ethel hit it squarely on the mark. Your readers want to make pretty, practical things. You've designed a dozen quilts for the quilting company that fit that bill exactly. Yes, but that's different. The quilting company is a business. You have to give the people what they want in order to make a profit. But my quilting column is a place to dream, don't you see? To find inspiration, to reach for the stars. Florence shook her head. Have it your way, Mrs. Longfellow, but leave me be. I have to write 100 letters and then meet with Arthur at 11 o'clock. No rest for the weary, as they say. This got Emmeline's attention. Meet with Arthur? What about? I don't recall. Florence looked around her office as though she might find the answer written on the walls. I'm not sure if he said. Maybe it's about selling me the building at long last. Emmeline raised an eyebrow. Maybe it's about the two of you finally getting married. To her surprise, instead of offering some pert retort, Florence seemed distressed. That might be the very thing he intends to discuss. As I've mentioned, I believe Arthur has formed an attachment with his new secretary. Emily retook her seat. I can hardly believe it, my dear. This elicited a wry smile. Of course you can. Didn't you predict that very thing at dinner a few weeks ago? Yes, but I was merely conjecturing. You didn't seem so upset about it then. I'm not sure I'm all that upset about it now, Florence admitted. And yet, if it's the case that Arthur has shifted his affections to another woman, I believe it means my course is set. I'm past the marrying age by most accounts, and I'm not sure that's the life I want in any event. Perhaps I was meant to be a spinster. You know, I've never felt a strong desire to have children. I daydreamed about having a family when I was younger, and I still think it would be nice. But that's not the same as feeling that I was meant to be a mother, is it? Did you feel that way, like it was imperative that you have children? Emmeline considered the question. In all honesty, she'd been scared to be a mother, not having had one of her own. Would she know what to do? Was there truly an animal instinct that would come into play after a baby was born? The answer to that had turned out to be yes and no. She had loved each of her babies ferociously the second they'd been placed in her arms. She'd felt a natural instinct to care for them and protect them. But as they got older, she felt less confident. She looked to others, Thomas's mother in particular, for guidance. She made mistakes. Do you remember when Eula talked about how she and Dan waited to have children, and how she was absolutely torn about that because she wanted children so much? I don't recall having that feeling, but then again, Thomas and I started a family right away. I guess what I'm saying is, you're 28 years old. I think if you were going to have that strong desire, you would have had it already. That's what I think too, Florence said, sounding relieved. When I wake up in the middle of the night, I'm not thinking about babies. I'm thinking about work. And my thoughts excite me so that it's hard to go back to sleep. Maybe that makes me a natural. Maybe not every woman is meant to be a mother, Emmeline said, feeling a bit like a libertine for even suggesting it. Most are, I think. But I can name two or three I know from this club or that one who spend an awful lot of time complaining about how horrible their children are. And these are women whose children have mostly been raised by nannies and housekeepers. I think I would like my children if I had them, Florence asserted. I just don't feel a strong need for them. You would be an absolute darling of a mother. I didn't mean to imply otherwise. And you might enjoy marriage as well. No need to make a decision right this very minute. But I want to make the decision, don't you see? A note of distress returned to Florence's voice. I don't want it made for me. Emmeline stood. Well, then, make the decision, my dear. After all, what kind of independent woman can't make up her own mind? You're absolutely right, Florence said. Yes, I know my decision. I think I made it in January, don't you?
Everyone thinks you made it in January, darling.
Emmeline walked to the door and turned around. And if you ask me, it was the right one. A few minutes later, Emmeline sat at her desk, pencil in hand, sketching out a block. Florence had made the right decision, hadn't she?
Oh, of course she had. At a different time in her life, Arthur would have been the perfect match. If they'd married 6 years ago as originally planned, Emmeline suspected that Arthur and Florence would have been very happy together. They'd been well suited and their affection for one another had been clear. Had they married, Florence's talent for business would have proven valuable to Arthur. She would have been a silent partner of sorts, advising Arthur when he came home with new ideas or problems that needed solving. But she never would have started the quilting company, might not have ever conceived of such a thing. That part of Florence would have been subsumed by family life, especially given that surely she wouldn't be the sort of wife and mother who passed her duties on to servants. Oh, one always made use of the help. Certainly Emmeline had, over the years. You'd go simply mad if you didn't. But as a motherless child herself, she would never give over the care and raising of her children to others. Florence, being such a warm and affectionate person, would have been in the middle of her family's comings and goings. There would have been no time for starting a business, as if married women with children did that sort of thing to begin with. Would marriage and babies have been the best path? Emmeline thought yes, though she'd never say so to Florence. But just because raising a family might have been the best path, it certainly wasn't the only path. That horrible Ethel Hinton probably thought there was only one way for a woman to live her life, Emmeline thought, returning to her sketch. Clearly, she thought there was only one way to make a quilt, or at the very least, one sort of quilt to make. It was maddening, really.
Give us a simple, pretty pattern, please. Nothing too taxing or artistic.
Well, she'd give them a pretty block that looked simple. How was that for a compromise?
Emmeline smiled to herself. She'd call it Young Maid's Puzzle, and it would be so darling no one would be able to resist making it, even if it took days to finish a single block. Take that, Mrs. Hinton, she thought as she added one more curved piece to the mix. And then another, and then threw in a scalene triangle, just for fun. Emmeline had stitched two blocks together in time for Wednesday's Bee, which she was hosting. She especially wanted to get Eula's thoughts, given that Eula was the only real farmer's wife that Emmeline knew. Not only that, she was an expert quilt maker and would be able to gauge the block's level of difficulty. Really, it looked more complicated than it actually was, or at least it seemed so to Emmeline. She supposed the other question she needed answered was whether or not the block was actually pretty. Emmeline secretly suspected it wasn't. There was a Rube Goldberg machine quality to it. She supposed she could ask Cora for her opinion, but why start the day on such a negative note? Emmeline felt almost nervous as she did some straightening in the living room. The fact was, that letter from Mrs. Hinton had made her doubt her own judgment, something she simply wasn't used to doing. She had assumed her readers would be happy for whatever she brought into their homes, that they would find her musings on quilts and art illuminating. Oh, what I have so often thought but could never half so well expressed, they'd murmur as they read. Perhaps most of them had had that thought,
Emmeline comforted herself. Maybe it was just old sourpuss Ethel who wanted Emmeline's column to be as bland and charmless as a bowl of oatmeal. Oh, she did so hate to be criticized. She didn't mind getting advice. Well, she didn't mind it all that much. Certainly, she'd welcomed Mother Grangerfield's advice on child-rearing, at least when the children were small. As they'd gotten older, Emmeline sensed that her mother-in-law was trying to shape the children's characters, readying them for society life. Emmeline had found herself pushing back against that. Perhaps her children were to the manor born, but they weren't actually aristocrats. Yes, they would eventually inherit wealth, and with that wealth would come responsibilities, not just to the family, but to the larger society. This was all well and good, but Emmeline feared such responsibilities would make her children dull. So many rich people she knew were so absolutely tedious. But her children? They were bright and funny, shiny as new pennies, full of life. She didn't want those qualities squeezed out of them as they grew, and so she made sure for every white-gloved tea party Margie attended as a little girl was followed by a trip to the Columbus Gallery of Fine Arts. Every cotillion class little Tommy was forced to sit through earned him a trip to the zoo or a baseball game. Mother Grangerfield hadn't approved. In her opinion, art was decadent and baseball was common. Fortunately, Thomas had agreed with Emmeline that the children should experience a wide range of entertainments and outings. Still, Emmeline had felt the prick of her mother-in-law's critiques, which sometimes came to her via Thomas and other times were offered directly to Emmeline. But she had been right about the children, and she was right about making her column about more than the presentation of easy block patterns. She was right, wasn't she? A knock on the front door interrupted this distressing train of thought. Thank goodness. I'll answer it, Emmeline called as she made her way to the foyer. What she really should do, she realized as she reached for the doorknob, was ask the girls for their advice. But what if they echoed Mrs. Hinton's sentiments? That was the problem with asking for advice from people you respected, she realized as she opened the door. You might actually have to take it. Hello, hello, Bess cried as she entered the house. We've come bearing gifts of lemon drops. Mr. Bonaparte is turning our house into a candy store. He drops something off for Edwina every day, it seems like. Ah, Edwina. Emmeline had been so distracted by her poison pen pal, she'd forgotten to look forward to the latest report on Edwina's friendship with Bonaparte. The last she'd heard, it appeared to be a match made in heaven. Of course, she heard this from Bonaparte himself, and the man was known to exaggerate at times. Hardly every day, Edwina said as she followed Bess into the house. And I don't think it has anything to do with his fondness for me. The man simply has a sweet tooth, and buying candy is an excuse to have a piece or two when the desire for something sweet strikes him. Perhaps you're the sweet he longs for, Emmeline said as she gestured toward the living room. He does seem so awfully fond of you. And I of him, Edwina admitted, taking a seat on the davenport. But there's nothing romantic about it. We're just two old folks talking about the old days. How is it that you two never met before now, I wonder? Emmeline mused, still standing, knowing that the others would be here soon. You both grew up here. You would think your paths would have crossed. Milton Falls can seem small, but it's really not, Edwina said as she pulled out her sewing. When I was growing up, you spent time with your family, by which I mean not just your own family, but grandparents, aunts and uncles, cousins, and so on. Outside of your family, you had friends at church and school. If someone outside of your family went to a different church or school, it was unlikely that your paths would cross. And remember, there weren't cars in those days. People didn't scoot off hither and yon, one direction and then another. Simply fascinating, Emmeline enthused. And wonderful in its way that you and Bonaparte can paint a fuller picture of Milton Falls for one another. The bell sounded, and Emmeline retraced her steps to the door, where she was greeted by Eula, Florence, and Elise, who held baby Jean in her arms. "My goodness, what a little quartet we have here," she exclaimed as she welcomed them inside. "Elise, you're looking well, I must say, and the baby is so plump. She's the picture of health." "She doesn't seem to do anything but eat these days," Eula said. "And it all goes to her cheeks," Florence added. "They get a little bit fatter every day." Elise didn't speak, but she smiled and gave Florence such a look of affection. Emmeline had to believe the girl was emerging from that dark place that giving birth seemed to have left her in. After the newcomers took their seats, Emmeline took hers and looked around. "I feel a bit unsettled without Dorothy in our midst." She turned to Florence. "Any word on how her new job is working out?" How funny, she thought, to be asking this of Florence, not Bess. "Better than expected," Florence said. "It sounds like she's working in more of an advisory position. Her young employer has no idea what she's about when it comes to homemaking, and Dorothy's putting her through her paces." "From the vantage point of a comfortable throne, I hope," Emmeline replied. "Not quite." Florence turned to Bess. "You know how Dorothy is. You can tell her to sit down and relax for a moment, and the woman simply won't do it." A shadow passed over Bess's face. "That's certainly true." "Oh, dear. Perhaps it had been a mistake to bring up Dorothy," Emmeline thought. How to lighten the mood? She glanced down at her sewing basket. Should she throw herself on the mercy of the court and ask what the others thought about her new block? "It will be good for you," she told herself as she pulled it out of her basket. "Let me get your thoughts on this, girls. I call it Young Maid's Puzzle." The next 30 seconds were excruciating. Everyone peered at Emmeline's block as though they were doctors examining a patient on the table. Was it healthy? Was it in dire need of repair? How much longer did it have to live? "You've got the start of something good there," Eula finally announced, "but I think it's too jumbled right now. I like a block that's a little complicated, but this has too much going on." Emmeline took a deep breath. "That wasn't so bad, now was it?" "So what should I do? What needs to be taken out?" A cloud of chatter rose from the group, each of its members offering a different idea. "Maybe I should start over," Emmeline said after a few minutes spent in this tower of babble. "Perhaps it was a mistake to design something in an effort to take revenge on a reader." Of course, everyone wanted to know what she meant, and Emmeline found herself taking out Ethel Hinton's letter and reading it. Its words still stung, but their teeth had become somewhat dulled by having been read repeatedly. "You're always going to have critics," Bess pointed out after Emmeline finished reading. "Best to let their words wash off you like rain, my dear." "I understand that I'll have critics," Emmeline said. "I just think they're wrong." Elise, who had been silent throughout this conversation, suddenly leaned toward Emmeline, pointing at the block.
Take out the funny triangles.
What? Emmeline stared at the girl. Clearly, her mind was still addled.
The triangles, Elise insisted. That's what's throwing the design off.
Make them even.
You know, make them...
isosceles? Florence finished for her, and then studied the block herself.
Yes, I believe Elise is correct. The scaling triangles are all wrong for what you're trying to do here.
Emmeline glanced at the block. Was that it?
Scaling triangles, Elise nodded. The triangles of revenge. And isosceles triangles are the triangles of...
friendship, Florence said, nodding.
Yes, that's the ticket right there. Emmeline, you know what you need to do. Make a friendlier block and then write Mrs. Hinton a note thanking her sincerely for her letter. Tell her you'll take her ideas into consideration.
And you can call your block Ethel's block, Bess chimed in. Emmeline looked around the circle, appalled by what she was hearing.
You're saying I should try to make friends with Ethel Hinton?
Everyone nodded. Emmeline frowned.
What a horrible idea.
But you'll try it, won't you? Elise asked. It would be so awfully nice if you did.
Well, what on earth was Emmeline supposed to say to that?
I suppose so.
Issuing another sigh, this one more dramatic than the first, Emmeline stood.
Now, let me go fetch my notepad so we can make this block one that my new best friend will simply adore.
She gave a slight bow, and much to her delight, applause filled the room. Walking to her secretary, she heard Florence say,
"What a wonderful idea, changing the triangles."
And she heard Elise's soft laughter in reply.
Emmeline supposed they were right. You caught more flies with honey, after all. Although who on earth wanted to catch flies? Still, her plan for getting rid of Edwina seemed to be working, and her new block was on its way to being the best thing that ever appeared on the pages of the Farmer's Wife magazine.
Perhaps she should write old Ethel a thank you note, Emmeline thought as she pulled her notepad from its drawer. She had to admit that the woman's little jab had pushed her into a new design, perhaps her best yet. She supposed she owed Ethel Hinton a small debt.
A very small debt.
Emmeline turned back around to face her friends.
All right, my dears. Tell me again what I need to do next.
Thanks for joining us on the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast. We're reading Friendship Album 1934, a novel by Frances O'Rourke Dow, a production of Milton Falls Media, Incorporated. Copyright 2022, all rights reserved. Until next time, this is Frances O'Rourke Dow. Thank you for joining us.